and fight this battle on those two different fronts. And I think, honestly, the policies are unhinged and they need to sit down around the table right now and to start to make sensible agreements, as it seems like people like Ben Wallace in our government, the previous Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab, maybe even Boris Johnson, who knows, to sit down and come up with a much better policy when it comes to our next general election with some kind of peace agreement with the Russians, and actually to stop this war, because the direction that they're going down seems very, very... They couldn't find anybody to replace Stoltenberg at NATO, could they? Nobody else wants to do the job, because they can see it all heading for World War III, and there are hundreds of millions of people in Europe and the United States that simply are not going to accept that.
And on that note, I thank both of you being with me on this spotlight. Andrei Dobryansky, Communications Director, Ukrainian Congress Committee of America out of New York. Tony Goslin, historian, investigative journalist, and former BBC employee out of Bristol. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another spotlight. I'm Marcia Hashimi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
Here we enlighten you with ayahs 261 and 262 from the Surah Baqarah, recited by Ali Parhiskar.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. The parable of those who spend their property in the way of Allah is as the parable of a grain growing 7 years, with 100 grains in every ear. And Allah multiplies for whom He pleases, and Allah is ample giving, knowing. As for those who spend their property in the way of Allah, then do not follow what they have spent with reproach or injury. They shall have their reward from their Lord, and they shall have no fear, nor shall they grieve.
The headlines. North Korea fires two ballistic missiles just a day after a U.S. nuclear-armed submarine visited the South. Russia accuses the U.S. of using its biolaboratories in African countries to test unregistered medicines on the local population. And Iran's top diplomat says his country's independence, sovereignty, and territorial integrity are not open to negotiation. Hello and welcome, everybody. Our top story for this half hour, North Korea's test fired two ballistic missiles that landed near Japan's territorial waters. The Japanese Defense Ministry said the projectiles landed outside the country's exclusive economic zone. The ministry said Tokyo was pursuing the matter through diplomatic channels. This, a day after a U.S. nuclear-capable submarine visited South Korea for the first time in 4 decades, the move prompted a response from North Korea. Kim Yo-jung, the North Korean leader's sister, castigated the deployment of the submarine near the Korean Peninsula. She warned against any, quote, foolish acts by Washington. Kim said the United States' conduct will only push Pyongyang further away from the negotiating table. Our correspondent in Seoul, Jennifer Chang, says the U.S. deployed its nuclear-capable submarine to the Korean Peninsula to flex its military muscle in the region.
These two missiles coincide with the arrival of the U.S.'s ballistic missile nuclear submarine, the USS Kentucky, which arrived in Busan yesterday, and this is the first time in 42 years that this submarine has been sent to South Korea. this submarine carries enough nuclear warheads to destroy all of North Korea, and they are loaded up on ballistic missiles that can fly for over 7,000 kilometers. So this is a mighty show of force against North Korea that is meant to reassure South Korea that South Korea does not have to arm itself with nuclear weapons, because the U.S. is opposed to that. And it is meant to demonstrate U.S. military strength. Now, North Korea fired two short-range ballistic missiles early this morning between 3:30 a.m. and about 3:45 a.m. from the Pyongyang area. And these flew for about 550 kilometers before splashing into the sea. And of course, these missiles demonstrate that North Korea can nuke any part of South Korea, including Busan, where this submarine is stationed. So this is a warning to the U.S. that it cannot conquer or restrain North Korea through military strength, because now North Korea has enough nuclear weapons to stave off any kind of attack that the U.S. and South Korea might be planning with nuclear weapons.
Russia has taken the lid off the U.S. military's covert biological activities in other countries. The chief of Russia's radiation, chemical, and biological defense troops has revealed that the Pentagon planned to use its biolaboratories in Africa to test unregistered medical drugs on local people there. Lieutenant General Igor Kirillov said the U.S. Defense Department then intended to submit the medicines for approval by supervisory authorities in the interests of big American pharmaceutical companies. Kirillov said a number of European Union structures were engaged to make these activities look like humanitarian cooperation. He said the revelations are based on documents found in Ukraine. The Russian general also said a U.S. biological lab at an airbase in Italy is studying military-related diseases. Elsewhere, South Africa has warned against any attempt to arrest President Vladimir Putin of Russia in an upcoming summit of the BRICS group of nations in Johannesburg. President Cyril Ramaphosa underscored South Africa's role in mediations to end more than a year of war between Russia and Ukraine. He also quoted a paper released by Moscow warning that any such attempt would amount to a, quote, declaration of war. Ramaphosa said such a move would undermine South Africa's mediatory role to help end the Ukraine conflict. This after an arrest warrant was issued by the International Criminal Court in March to arrest the Russian president over alleged war crimes. Putin is expected to attend the BRICS summit next month. The Kremlin announced on the 17th of July that it notified Turkey, the UN, and Ukraine that Russia currently stands against the renewal and extension of the UN-brokered Black Sea Grain Agreement. Moscow had been considering withdrawing from the deal for months, given that several demands to dispatch its grain and fertilizer had yet to be met.
The Kremlin has said that Russia has halted its participation in a deal that allowed Ukraine to ship grain through the Black Sea to parts of the world struggling with hunger. Hours earlier, an explosion knocked out Russia's bridge to Crimea in what Moscow called an attack by Ukrainian sea drones, killing two people. The road bridge is a major artery for Russian troops fighting in Ukraine. Moscow said there was no link between the attack and its decision to suspend the grain deal over what it called a failure to meet its demands to implement a parallel agreement easing rules for its own food and fertilizer exports. The United Nations and Turkey brokered the landmark accord with Ukraine and Russia in July last year, which came with a separate agreement to facilitate shipments of Russian food and fertilizer that Moscow insists has not been applied. Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov said on Monday, hours before the Black Sea Grain Initiative was set to expire, that Russia would return to the deal immediately if its demands about its exports were met.
The Black Sea agreements are no longer in effect. The deadline, as the Russian president said earlier, is July the 17th. Unfortunately, the part of these Black Sea agreements concerning Russia has not yet been fulfilled. As a result, it has been terminated.
Russia has complained that not enough grain has reached poor countries, but the UN says the arrangement has benefited those states by helping lower food prices by more than 20% globally. According to the UN, as of Monday, almost 8 million tons of goods have been shipped to China, nearly 25% of the 32.9 million tons exported, while almost 44% of exports were shipped to high-income countries. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said his country was prepared to continue grain exports despite Russia's withdrawal from the deal.
Even without the Russian Federation, everything must be done so that we can use this Black Sea corridor. We're not afraid. We've been approached by companies that own ships. They said that they're ready to continue shipment.
Meanwhile, Russia's move to exit the Black Sea Grain Export Agreement will deal a blow to global food security and result in higher food prices.
Russia's withdrawal from a critically important wartime deal that allowed the export of Ukrainian grain via the Black Sea has reignited fears about global food security. Analysts have described the initiative's demise as an inevitable setback and a blow to markets.
Wheat and corn prices on global commodities markets jumped Monday after Russia pulled out of a crucial deal allowing the export of grain from Ukraine. The collapse of the pact threatens to push up food prices for consumers worldwide and tip millions into hunger. Meanwhile, UN Chief Antonio Guterres deeply regretted Russia's decision.
Today's decision by the Russian Federation will strike a blow to people in need everywhere. But it will not stop our efforts to facilitate the unimpeded access to global markets for food products and fertilizers from both Ukraine and the Russian Federation.
Guterres also signaled the termination of a UN pact with Moscow to help facilitate Russia's agricultural and fertilizer exports in return for the safe export of Ukrainian grain. According to the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, before the war, Ukraine was the fifth largest wheat exporter globally, accounting for 10% of exports. According to the United Nations, it is also by far the biggest exporter of sunflower oil, accounting for 46% of the world's exports. Last year, economic shocks that included the impacts of the Ukraine war and the pandemic were the main reasons for acute food insecurity in 27 countries, affecting nearly 84 million people. That's according to a report by the Food Security Information Network, a data-sharing platform funded by the European Union and the United States. The FSIN defines acute food insecurity as lacking enough food to the extent that it puts the person's life or livelihood at risk. The International Rescue Committee said in November that the deal's collapse would hit those on the brink of starvation the most. The warning came after Moscow suspended its participation in the pact for several days following drone attacks in Sevastopol, a port city in Crimea.
Elsewhere, the Iranian foreign minister says the independent sovereignty and territorial integrity of the Islamic Republic are not and never will be up for negotiation. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the comments in a phone call with his Russian counterpart Sergei Lavrov. He was reacting to a statement by Russia and the Persian Gulf Cooperation Council regarding Iran's sovereignty over the three Persian Gulf islands. Amir Abdullahian said strong relations between the two countries should not be harmed by such statements. Lavrov, for his part, reaffirmed Moscow's commitment to the fundamental principles of international law, including respect for the sovereignty and territorial integrity of states. The Israeli regime carries out yet another airstrike on Syria despite repeated warnings by Damascus. The Syrian military says its air defenses confronted barrages of Israeli missiles from the direction of the occupied Golan Heights. It said the missiles targeted some positions in the vicinity of Damascus, which resulted in the injury of two soldiers and some material damage. The Syrian military said it shot down most of the missiles. The Israeli regime routinely targets areas in Syria, particularly in and around the capital, Damascus. Syria has repeatedly called on the United Nations to make Israel end the attacks. Our Damascus correspondent, Mohammed Ali, joined us earlier with more details about the latest Israeli attack on Syria.
it seemed that, according to some images posted online of fire that broke out due to such attacks, the attacks hit perhaps a Syrian military target in an area called Qudsiyah suburbs, which is in Damascus countryside. Now, definitely, this is not the first attack, Israeli attack of its kind on Syria. There is still no comment from the Israeli side. Usually, they don't comment on each attack they carry out. But the Syrian army, of course, the Syrian army is not surprised by such an attack. And definitely, we always hear from the Syrian foreign ministry following such attacks, letters being sent to the UN condemning such an aggression and calling on the international community to condemn also, and on the UN body to perhaps shoulder its responsibility in preserving international peace and security. But up till this moment, and after hundreds of Israeli attacks, there is still silence from the international community. No step or condemnation whatsoever was made following such attacks.
Crisis deepens in Israel as its forces keep cracking down on anti-regime protesters. The regime forces used batons and water cannons to disperse the protesters. Some were arrested. Several cities, including Al-Quds, Tel Aviv, and Haifa, were the scene of demonstrations. In Al-Quds, protesters gathered in front of the parliament. In Tel Aviv, demonstrators gathered outside the military headquarters. The major grievance of the protesters since January has been judicial changes proposed by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. In the meantime, some of the regime's reservists have threatened not to heed call-up orders as part of the protest. According to an Israeli general, 161 reserve officers have vowed to no longer report for duty. We earlier asked author and journalist Eric Wahlberg about the expanding anti-Netanyahu protests in Israel. Here's what he had to say.
The trouble is that Israel has been shifting to the right over the last decade, and this has given more power to the ultra-conservative and also to the Netanyahu, the settler colonialists, settler colonies that are sprouting up just every day, more and more. And this really, from our point of view, from those that are interested in Palestine, this is, of course, terrible to take the power of the Supreme Court away, not only for the corruption charges against Netanyahu, which Netanyahu is very eager to get rid of, but also for the Palestinians. This is, the Supreme Court is almost like the last surviving element of any sanity within the government. So it's this right-wing shift, and the Israelis are not, the young are not interested in this. They're secular. They came to live in Israel, to live a nice Western style life. They're not interested in the ultra-Orthodox. They're not interested in the aggressive anti-Palestinian movement to try and dispossess Palestinians. So slowly the essence of the protests is moving more towards what's of interest to the Palestinians.
Elsewhere, tensions continue to simmer in Peru as residents of the key mining areas back fresh demonstrations against the administration of President Dina Boluarte. The protests called by unions and left-wing groups are expected to begin this week. Boluarte has denounced the planned demonstrations as a threat to democracy. Her government has been in hot water since December when she was sworn in following the impeachment of former President Pedro Castillo. Protesters have called for the dissolution of Congress, the drafting of a new constitution, and Boluarte's resignation. She has been criticized for the government's harsh crackdown on the demonstrations, which have left dozens of people dead. At least one person has been killed and hundreds of people have been injured in violent protests across Bangladesh. The opposition Bangladesh Nationalist Party, BNP, said one of its members was killed. It blamed the student wing of the ruling party for the killing. The opposition also accused the police of opening fire on the protesters. The BNP has reportedly planned more protests. Bangladesh has been the scene of violence for months. Protesters demand the ouster of Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina. They also want early elections to be held under a neutral caretaker. The incumbent government stands accused of charges of corruption and human rights abuses. The Prime Minister and his associates are accused of involvement in the kidnapping of opposition figures and their supporters. That's a wrap for now.
When the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day He appointed for a rising. To Thee belongs praise, for Thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst Thou willed, Thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to Thee belongs praise, for Thou created, then proportioned, and ordained and decreed, and gave death and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure, and provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship.
Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to thee, to be joyful in worshipping thee, to be desirous of thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom thou wilt.
Greetings to Muharram, greetings to Hussein. In the name of God, salam and welcome to the program. As the Islamic month of Muharram arrives, mourning ceremonies and gatherings are held across the Islamic countries and other countries where Muslim communities live. The streets and alleys are adorned with black fabrics, which usually contain writings on Imam Hussein and his unmatched uprising. Glorious groups in orderly lines march on the streets, while calling the sacred name of the Master of the Martyrs and beating their chests. Children, men and women, old and young, take part in mourning ceremonies in black clothes. Prophet of Islam, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, said, "Indeed, there is warmth for Hussein in the hearts of the faithful, which will never be cooled down." Greetings to Muharram, greetings to Hussein. Imam Reza, peace upon him, said on his father, Imam Musa Kazem, peace upon him, "When the month of Muharram arrived, no one would see my father smiling. Every day his grief would increase till the 10th day. That day would be his day of disaster, sorrow, and crying." It has also been narrated that Imam Reza, peace upon him, told his companion, Rayyan ibn Shabib, "O son of Shabib, indeed, Muharram is the month which the people would observe its respect during the era of Jahiliyat. They would consider it forbidden to wrong or fight in this war. But this Ummah neither observed the respect of this month nor that of the Prophet. They killed his children, captivated his womenfolk, and looted their properties. O son of Shabib, if you want to cry for anything, cry for Hussein, son of Ali ibn Abi Talib." Then the Imam continued, "O son of Shabib, if you cry for Hussein so that your tears roll down on your cheeks, God will forgive every sin of yours, be it small or great. O son of Shabib, if you like to be settled in the houses of paradise with the messenger of God, damn the killers of Hussein. And whenever you recall him, say, I wish I were with them so that I would gain great success."
Mm-hmm.
A brief look at the practice of the Ahlul Bayt, peace upon them, shows that they would observe the month of Muharram as the period of sorrow and mourning for the calamities of Imam Hussein, his companions and his family. They would both weep for Imam Hussein, peace upon him, and urge their followers to the same. They would ask the faithful to glorify the month of Muharram through holding mourning ceremonies. Crying for Imam Hussein revives religious signs. Imam Mahdi, may God expedite his reappearance, describes his grandfather, Imam Hussein, peace upon him, in Ziyarat Nahiye Muqaddase as follows. You are the son of the Prophet and explicator of the Quran. You are the helper and support of the Ummah and the struggle in the way of Allah's obedience, the guardian of the covenant, the destroyer of the ways of falsehood and hypocrisy. You are the one who was engaged in genuflection and prostration. You were so ascetic in the world, like the one who is migrating from the world. Imam Hussein, peace upon him, never forgot God, even for a single moment. As a matter of fact, the mystery of his eternity is that he was a true servant of God. Whatever he did in his life was for God's sake and in the way of God. He would whisper, "In the name of Allah, the compassionate, the merciful, I seek help from Allah's name and Allah's truth, and in the way of Allah, and in obedience of the religion of Allah's messenger. And I have trusted in God, and there is no move or power except what God the Great wishes. O Allah, indeed I have put my soul under your care and turned my face toward you and ceded my affair to you." The month of Muharram is the time of zeal of fervor. This month causes the hearts to join one another. All hearts turn toward Hussein and try to know him more and more. Everyone tries to take him as his role model. The faithful try to learn the lessons of Hussein and get as closer to him as they can. The personality of Hussein keeps shining throughout history, and it draws the seekers of freedom across the world. This peerless personality has caused formation of anti-colonialist and anti-oppression movements across the world. Today, also, all movements which fight the global arrogance and Zionism owe their formation to Imam Hussein's uprising. Imam Hussein, peace upon him, didn't like to live a few years more under the rule of a libertine like Yazid. He taught dignity, freedom, and truth to human generations. He clearly showed that being Muslim does not comply with accepting humility. His followers, too, seek freedom and dignity through incessant struggle against the manifestations of oppression and arrogance, the US, Israel, and their lackeys and minions across the world.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Midstream.
Resistance movement that the West Bank and occupied Al-Quds have been experiencing in recent years took a sharp, steep slope upwards in the past 2 weeks as a result of the epic Jenin operation. The month of June 2023 can be seen as the beginning of a new phase for the popular resistance movement in the West Bank. The failure of the occupation's army attack in itself was not the distinguishing feature of Jenin's firmness of the free battle, for which the Zionist Hebrew Press chose the name Battle of Jenin. Rather, the qualitative development was the emergence of sophisticated explosive devices in addition to the resistance adopting new, more professional combat tactics by which it lured the attacking forces into ambushes with explosive devices, was something that the West Bank had not seen for many years. So much so that the Hebrew Press likened what its occupation army was exposed to in the Jenin camp to what it was exposed to in southern Lebanon during times of occupation. Fast forward 1 week later, on Monday, June 26, a clip circulated social media went viral showing an attempt to launch two homemade rockets from Jenin towards the usurped Ramon illegal colonial settlement in the Gilboa area. Israeli media described the event as a dangerous and advanced development. This progress in the resistance action imposes on the Palestinian resistance and its supporters urgent requirements that must be fully adhered to, as many data indicate after the Battle of Jenin, the possibility of the enemy resorting to a military escalation in the north of the West Bank, and against the Jenin camp in particular. And it was not a surprise to anyone that it actually was kick-started on Monday, July 3rd. Till the writing of this report, the invasion is still ongoing and the resistance is showcasing unwavering steadfastness and firmness. The occupation has always been expressing its serious concern that the resistance movement in the West Bank will reach the stage of a comprehensive third intifada. Not to mention that the occupation cannot tolerate the development of the resistance situation in the West Bank into a similar situation to that in Gaza. So how about if we take into account some of the intelligence information received from Jordan about serious efforts by the resistance to introduce drone weapons into the West Bank? This means that the next stage for the West Bank is considered extremely dangerous, as the resistance movement in it is still young and is not enough for it to intensify support by means of steadfastness, including money and equipment only. Rather, what it is required to provide it is an effective protection network for the resistance internally and regionally, so as to provide it with a cover in the face of the encroachment of the occupation. This is done by drawing up rules of engagement based on the balance of deterrence that currently exists between the enemy and the axis of resistance. Welcome to the Mideast Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. Palestinians in the northern occupied West Bank attempted to launch two homemade rockets at Zionist settlers. Now, Zionist occupation forces claim that the rockets landed in Palestinian-controlled territory in the northern West Bank and did not cross into illegal colonial settlements. Zionists said that one managed to fly some 80 meters distance, while the second mostly failed and traveled only 5 meters. But what the Zionists failed to confess is what this means, that is, Jenin is not, this is not a reaction from Jenin or a short-term plan from Jenin to respond to Israeli attacks, but rather a project that was implemented and planned for many years. We're supposed to talk about this main issue. We are joined with Mr. Mohammed Jradat from Jenin in the West Bank, where the Israeli entity is on Jenin with an aggression, with a ground invasion, with bombardment campaigns. Mr. Jradat is a Palestinian author and researcher and political commentator from inside Jenin, where right now the Israeli entity is just a couple of hundred meters away from his house. Mr. Mohammed Jradat, thank you very much for being with us, especially at this time, especially at such
a challenging time in the West Bank. Thank you for being there despite these challenges and these risks. Now, the popular resistance movement in the West Bank and the occupied Al-Quds in recent years have been improving from one phase to another, despite the highly complex security environment that they are in, which we are seeing right now as we speak. And this show is actually being recorded. So if you see this a bit late, it's because we decided to record it right now in the morning while the invasion is being through, going through Jenin, and the Palestinian resistance is showing great struggle. Now, Mr. Jadad, firing rockets from Jenin and the current scene that we see from Jenin, what kind of a significance does it make for the elevation of tactics for the resistance inside of occupied West Bank?
The tactic performed by the Jenin battalion and its comrades in arms in Jenin has reached the stage of the Tamer explosive devices. In honor of the martyr Tamer al-Nashrati, the engineer who started these attempts, which were crowned with success after his martyrdom. This resistance that is taking place today in Jenin, in light of this large-scale Israeli military operation in which tanks are brought in and 15 air raids have been carried out so far, which the enemy considered to present a shock to the Jenin camp, perhaps in order to direct its missiles through warplanes, Apache planes, and drones to cause a shock among the heroes of the Jenin camp battalion. However, what happened is that none of these goals were achieved, and the attack did not produce any results. We are facing a scene of failure initiated by the occupier. Therefore, the occupation is now bringing tanks to approach the city of Jenin, after they raided the city with 200 military vehicles of D9 bulldozers and giant caterpillars that bulldoze the streets in order to spoil the explosive devices, which are equipped with an extended zipper that leads the vehicles to find IEDs. We saw how this bulldozer was damaged by the massive explosion that targeted it, and the world saw it less than an hour ago. The confrontation that is raging now, from which Netanyahu wants to pave the way for a renewed cycle of settlements that will swallow up what is left of the West Bank, leaving no politician or resistance in it. This is how they plan. But the heroes of Jenin camp today are the ones who are drawing the epic battle and finalizing the results on the ground.
Mr. Muhammad, what you're saying is very important, and especially what we saw from the Jenin brigades that lured in the Zionist occupation last week, as they're happening right now, and they ambushed them with high explosive devices. Just before I entered the studio, one of the biggest explosive devices actually was detonated in one of the Zionist enemy vehicles. They have highly armored vehicles, putting them out of service. They besieging the crews of the Zionists, damaging other vehicles. But we did see that the Zionist entity is trying with bulldozers to literally break the cement from the floors of the streets of Jenin. That was pretty amazing to see, putting the Zionist entity at such an edge. But don't you think that this ground invasion will only accelerate the intifada, or will it do what it did in 2002 in Jenin?
The epic Jenin battle of 2002, in which Sharon and Mufaz lost 24 soldiers from the elite forces at the time and more than 140 injuries, including permanent disabilities. In this scene today, we are facing something similar to a lesser extent. It is similar to it in terms of the intensity of the force, as the Jenin Brigade called the operation the name Firmness of Jenin. Indeed, the media is reporting, and we are here in the middle of the hot sand, only hundreds of meters away, watching and anticipating developments as these tactics lead to real results. Otherwise, the Zionist enemy would not have been forced to the full participation of the Air Force in the operation. On the contrary, the Air Force has the central role in this attack. Otherwise, the occupation would not have had to bring its tanks, and it would not be satisfied with 200 vehicles, tracks, and bulldozers. These are the tanks that are now creeping to settle in the Jenin camp main square, and therefore they can only demolish houses, sweep cars, and make holes in the walls. These tactics, which are being performed by the Jenin Battalion and the Northern Brigade, mean that the battle is still in its early stages and that successes are being achieved. Everyone watched the mechanisms infiltrate since the start of the operation 9 hours ago, then during it, and then a short while ago. And as the Jenin Brigade said a while ago, the coming hours are full of surprises and developments, and that the resistance hiding more in its arsenal to give the occupier a taste of Jenin's might.
Mr. Mohammed, looking at the overall balance of power, whether regionally or even inside of Palestine, can it be said that this right now is a realistic opportunity for the Palestinian resistance in specific to tip the scale in its own favor, starting from Jenin and working towards the entire West Bank?
The past rounds 2 years ago, when the occupation launched Operation Breaking Waves and arrested thousands, killed hundreds, injured thousands, and practiced repression and collective punishment on the people of Jenin, but the popular incubator remained attached to its constants, principles, and radical view of the occupation. Here in Jenin, Israel is seen as a settlement that must be eradicated. This thought and the psychological atmosphere with which these young men were charged with after the 2002 Jenin massacre came after a failed attempt to cauterize the Palestinian consciousness. But we see today that their awareness exceeds the awareness of experts and wise men. The tactics adopted by the Jenin Battalion today, in addition to the high morale, create one option for the Palestinians, which can turn the equation around and create an opportunity. Yes, there is an opportunity now in front of Jenin and an opportunity in front of the West Bank and Gaza and the axis of resistance, and in front of the Palestinian people and the nation to make a difference, so that Netanyahu and his brutal coalition will be defeated, and the Israeli settlement project will fall, and the annexation of the West Bank will fail. Yes, there is an opportunity that can turn the situation around, so that the equation becomes in favor of the Palestinians, despite their primitive capabilities.
Mr. Mohammed Shradad, this is what I was afraid of, either to lose the internet connection or the electricity. I want to thank you very, very much for being with us. We wish you victory. We wish you steadfastness. I wish we could do more than what we are doing right now. This is the best that we can do, is voice what's going on in Jenin to the entire world to see. I want to thank you very much, Mr. Mohammed Shradad, for being with us from Jenin, Palestinian author, researcher, and political commentator. Please, ladies and gents, stay tuned because we will talk more about what the Islamic Jihad is putting out there for the Zionists to see.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marwa Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts.
It is Jenin, the cradle of the resistance fighters and the cradle of the martyrs, which caused the most extremist Israeli administration a headache and a permanent nightmare in terms of denying the enemy the ability to freely infiltrate the Palestinian territories. The recent Jenin operation and the ongoing Jenin operation right now was irrefutable evidence that the Palestinian resistance demonstrated the possibility of forming a new front similar to the front in Gaza, inside the West Bank itself. And this is what is considered a crucial development if it were to be used properly and effectively, inshallah. More details in this following report.
The Secretary General of the Islamic Jihad Movement in Palestine, Ziad Nakhale, declared on Saturday, July 1st, that plans have been put in place to arm the occupied West Bank, whether by smuggling weapons or by purchasing weapons from the Israeli occupation itself. According to a security source linked to the Palestinian Authority, the Islamic Jihad movement managed over the past 18 months to establish several armed resistance cells in the northern West Bank. Nakhale also called for the intensification of armed attacks against the Israeli occupation, especially by relying on its growing influence in the West Bank. Regarding the resistance, Nahali stressed that its centrality is the Jenin Battalion affiliated with the Al-Quds Brigades, indicating that there are much fewer military groups than the factions, but the main military group currently present in the Jenin camp is the Jenin Battalion affiliated with the Al-Quds Brigades. Nahali then asserted that this does not mean that there are no other factions, and it is possible for them to benefit from the Jenin Battalion in terms of arming and transportation as well. The Jenin operation proved that there is an existing and revived project to transform the West Bank into a new Gaza Strip. It is capable of breaking enemy fortifications and is able to transform the region into a kind of autonomy. Jenin imposed itself on the forces supporting the Palestinian resistance as a future destination for armaments. In other words, the supporters of the resistance can now include the West Bank and Jenin within the project of what is known as the unity of the battlefields, meaning that Jenin and the West Bank in general will participate in any actions against the Israeli entity in the event that the Palestinian territories are exposed to any Israeli aggression. The Battle of Dignity in Jenin showed the Arabs seeking normalization and those who have already normalized with the Zionist entity that those who resist in the occupied territories are the entirety of the Palestinian people in different regions of Palestine, as it is not a confined and anomalous process in the Gaza Strip. What happened in Jenin is not a reaction or a short-term plan to respond to the Israeli attacks, but rather a project that was implemented and planned for many years. The importance of this operation is not limited to the neutralization of the Israeli ground forces in the West Bank, but rather goes beyond it to the fact that the West Bank has become an intractable arena for the Israelis and a present evidence of exposing those who have normalized with the occupation, and a clear and explicit evidence of U.S. evasion with regard to the Palestinian file. And we as observers of the issue expect a lot more to come from the West Bank and Jenin.
Now to discuss the crucial matters going on in Jenin, occupying West Bank, with us from Beirut is Mr. Ihsan Ataya. He is the member of the Political Bureau of the Islamic Jihad Movement in Palestine. Mr. Ihsan, thank you very much for being with us. Now, 2 days ago, we did hear the Secretary General of the Islamic Jihad Movement in Palestine, Mr. Ziad Nakhali, saying that programs and plans have been put in place to arm the West Bank, whether by smuggling weapons or even purchasing weapons from the Israeli Zionist entity itself. This is a very dangerous statement made by one of Israel's most wanted resistance leaders. What was this announcement a result of what happened in Jenin, or is it an ongoing result of the current invasion happening in Jenin camp?
What is happening is confirmation that the resistance project of the Al-Quds Brigades continues in full swing in Jenin and in more than one occupied Palestinian camp and city in the West Bank. This program has been used by the Jihad movement for a long time until we reached the capacity we recently touched in confronting the imbalance of Jenin, Nablus, and more than one Palestinian area in the West Bank. This honorable scene that we are witnessing today in the face of the occupation in order to strengthen the unity of the Palestinian position on the field. This required us to secure arms, secure money, and secure the necessary logistical and technical support for the resistance fighters inside the West Bank in general and in Jenin in particular. Jenin, which has always been considered the citadel of resistance and the citadel of confrontation against which all attempts of the enemy to storm it or to remove, strike, or weaken the resistance are broken. Therefore, this assertion confirms that the resistance of the Palestinian people is in Jenin and that the Al-Quds Brigades in the Islamic Jihad movement are at the forefront of the scene today in confronting this enemy and are working to secure everything necessary to support the Palestinian resistance in the West Bank to confront this enemy. This is because the Islamic Jihad movement believes that the West Bank is the tipping point that will lead to breaking the project of the enemy in the entire region, starting with breaking it in Palestine.
Well, Mr. Ataya, we've heard over the past week and a half or over 10 days from extremist Zionists that they are pushing for a direct military operation, which we just saw today started early morning on Monday, July 3rd, against the Jenin residential areas, whether through bombardments or whether through ground invasions and bulldozers that are ripping the streets apart. Do you think that Israel has its back covered by going through this very risky operation?
The Zionist enemy is always trying to flee forward. And we can say that it is also avoiding surrender and trying to restore its deterrence. But this is what it always fails to do. This is because the leaders of the Zionist enemy are fully aware of the will of the resistance and the belief of the Palestinian people in the West Bank, in the resistance in particular. And also everywhere in Gaza and wherever the Palestinian people are, is very strong. They are always certain that they cannot surrender to this enemy. And therefore, the enemy faces stubborn resistance and a resistance that wants to liberate the land and sanctities. And therefore, it is forced to engage in some confrontations in an attempt to break, weaken, or eradicate the will of the resistance if they can. And this is what cannot happen. This is because the resistance has become stronger. And every day, it proves that it is worthy of confrontation, that it is stronger than ever, and that it is developing and escalating. We believe that the development of resistance shortens the life of the occupation. Therefore, the enemy that is in a state of confusion, and which we see today confronting and attacking Jenin, confirms that this enemy is trying to restore its image of deterrence. But of course, it will fail, as it did before.
Well, we did see, Mr. Ataya, that the security tension in Jenin served as a strategic warning signal for the Israeli regime, not only because of the security threats that could escalate further more into the illegal colonial settlements, but also because of the dramatic change that could occur on the entire Palestinian map as we know it, and the identity itself. And also it might be reflected on Gaza as well. That's internally. We didn't even talk about what could happen externally. But how will that affect the strategy of the Islamic Jihad, especially in the West Bank?
The strategy of the Islamic Jihad movement is resistance and the continuation of the resistance until the liberation of Palestine and the defeat of the occupation. This strategy is being strengthened day after day. And in every confrontation, the enemy tries to weaken the strength and this resistance, we find that it is getting stronger and stronger, and thus achieving new targets. Because of these accumulated achievements by the Palestinian resistance in general, which was able today to form a spearhead to confront this enemy, cannot retreat any longer. The strategy of the Islamic Jihad movement would remain based on continuing the resistance and on continuing the resistance work in all forms, on top of which is the armed resistance, which will affect the depth of the Zionist consciousness and thus make it feel insecure and unstable on the land of Palestine. This makes the Zionist think of leaving either voluntarily or by force of resistance. The resistance continues, and the resistance will keep on struggling until this Zionist project is broken and the sanctities are liberated, Allah willing.
Well, Mr. Ehsan Ataya, who is member of the Political Bureau of the Islamic Jihad Movement in Palestine, thank you very, very much for being with us today, especially in such a day where Jenin is facing one of the fiercest enemies this region has ever known, the Israeli Zionist entity, the Israeli temporary Zionist entity. We thank you for your contribution, and ladies and gents, to follow the updates about this matter. I want to thank you for joining us. As always, please stay tuned. We will get you the updates from what's going on, especially in Palestine and in the region of West Asia in general. Thank you again for joining us, and we'll see you again next week. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
In the limelight.
Julian Assange is dangerously close to extradition for revealing U.S. war crimes. This is the first time a publisher has been charged under the Espionage Act for disclosing government secrets. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for the second part. Truthout noted, the U.S. Espionage Act charges in the indictment include the following: conspiracy to obtain, receive, and disclose national defense information, unauthorized obtaining and receiving of national defense information, and unauthorized disclosure of national defense information. In addition, Assange is charged with conspiracy to commit computer intrusion with intent to facilitate Manning's acquisition and transmission of classified information related to the national defense of the United States.